Hello, this is The Way Phase 4, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. I started broadcasting in radio and TV almost 25 years ago now, and I've been writing my whole life. This podcast, though, is dedicated to my fandom of everything going on with Marvel on Disney+. Today's discussion is about the latest and maybe last episode of the show WandaVision, Episode 9, titled The Series Finale. This podcast contains spoilers and speculation that can sometimes venture beyond this show into other Marvel movies and shows, so beware. It appears from both the name of the episode and the content of it that we've been saying Season 1 when we could have just left that part out, even though Disney Plus has that category under episodes for the show. But this appears to wrap up the entire series, so it appears to be a one and done. Do you want to be part of the podcast and have your voice heard? Well, first, write down something interesting and send it to us, either at our email address, thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com, at thewayphase4 on Twitter, and facebook.com/thewayphase4. Feedback? It appears we haven't reached a large audience yet, though some of our points have shown up elsewhere after we've posted our podcast, which is almost assuredly just coincidence. But I do happen to take pride in those things that I noticed the same week of the episode's airing that would only show up later, as I mentioned, in later episode discussions by other creators on their other podcasts. So that is something that I take pride in when I'm the first one to mention it, at least. Maybe not notice it, but mention it. Anything new? Well, Paul Bettany came clean in an interview the morning the episode was released, saying his comments about working with an actor that he's always wanted to work with were kind of misleading. It seems like he was probably talking about acting against himself, and we'll explain that later. We find out about Ralph in the episode, and a major character or two goes missing, maybe even more. Director Matt Shakman did an interview on Kevin Smith and Mark Bernardin's podcast, which answers a lot of the questions of his intention in directing. And there's everything from additional scenes that might have been shot and cut, and the meaning behind certain things. Like, I can tell you right off the bat that the little mention about the movie Kick-Ass was not intentional. And there were a number of other things that were not intentional that people derived some meaning from, or the mention about the astrophysicist that Monica Rambeau happens to know, not intentional. It wasn't a nod to Reed Richards or any other characters in the Marvel Comics universe or MCU. It just was an accident, almost a happy accident, but it did get a little bit misleading if you were trying to make some, you know, theories. So there were things that they intended and things that they didn't. And hearing Matt Shakman talk to Kevin Smith and Mark Bernardin about it was very enlightening. Jack Schaefer is the showrunner, and her opinion is really the final say on intentions of the script and the story going forward. And she had a few things to say in a recent New York Times interview, including she slyly kind of took most of the credit for the line that everyone seemed to love in Episode 8 from Wanda's Vision, where he says, "What is grief but love persevering?" She gives credit to her assistant for the word persevering instead of what she says was her original surviving. And then she does try to spread around the credit for the rest of the line to the writer's room, but she was asked about who came up with the line, and then she credited writer Laura Dani as doing great work on the episode, but it seemed like she kind of took credit for the actual famous line that we're all quoting now. If I can remember, I will try to provide show notes, links in the show notes for those two interviews. Other things, we see one theory come true about someone we meet for the first time in this episode, but it's not someone we speculated on. It was just something about the eventuality of this happening that takes place in the Westview Theater, if you're wondering what I'm speaking of. The episode description is available for the series finale, and was immediately available Friday morning that the episode was released. It says, "The events of WandaVision come to a head, and the destinies of all who took part are determined." Time to talk about where we last left off. We learned it's not only been Agatha all along, but it's been Agatha since at least 1693. We saw a flashback to Agatha absorbing powers from some fellow witches in Salem, her own coven in fact, and it included her mother. She's in search of power, and that's why Agatha is interested in Wanda. Through some magic, they both view Wanda's trauma by taking a walk through the past where we see Wanda's parents perish in an explosion, see that Wanda has always had some powers, but they were amplified by the Mind Stone, see the beginnings of her relationship with Vision, and discover Director Hayward is a stone-cold liar. Agatha finally gets what she wants, viewing Westview's transformation from a burst of magic from Wanda, chaos magic, which makes Wanda dangerous because she's a being of myth, the Scarlet Witch. Mid-credits, we also see Hayward's endgame. He's been putting the pieces back together, and now he has the power, Wanda's power, which helps him get a pale-skinned corpse of Vision back online.
Previously on WandaVision.
It's our final previously on, at least for this season of WandaVision. We see Monica Rambeau open Agatha's basement doors, and maybe just as important, we're reminded that we can see that Monica can actually see residual purple magic in those roots that are growing up. Pietro catches her giving his Snooper's Gonna Snoop line. Inside the basement, Wanda wonders aloud, "Where are my children?" Agatha shackles Wanda with purple magic and brings her to the center of the basement. The purple-powered witch shows off the runes around the room, points them out, saying, "These are runes, Wanda. Only the witch that casts the runes can use her magic." Before the hex, well, right before it, we see Wanda in the empty lot that would become her Westview home, and her red hex energy bursts forth. Agnes starts voicing over Wanda, releasing the energy, saying, "Vision was gone, but you wanted him back." We see Vision forming from the red, orange, yellow magic in the now-formed home. Vision appears how he did in that first episode in black and white. Quick clips of Agatha finishing up her line, Wanda breaking open the glass partition at Sword HQ, and the body of Vision splayed out like in an autopsy. Wanda touching Vision's head and voicing over it, "He's all I have." Hayward voices over saying, "Well, that's just it, Wanda. He isn't yours, he's ours." And we see pale Vision come online like in the last episode. But Hayward's line, though, is definitely modified from episode 8. It adds in the "he's ours" part at the end. And yes, I did check. We get a shot of Monica Rambeau looking up after a superhero landing. Eyes are glowing blue. "Hayward's gonna burn Westview to the ground just to get what he wants," she says to Wanda, adding, "Don't let him make you the villain." Wanda responds, "Maybe I already am." We then see Agatha at the end of last episode hovering above the streets of Westview with Tommy and Billy on magic leashes. And she says, "This is chaos magic, Wanda, and that makes you the Scarlet Witch." We see the image Wanda had from the Mind Stone of the Scarlet Witch flicker in over the shot of Wanda. And then we get to the Marvel Studios title sequence. It's back to its Marvel red glory after changing to purple before last week's episode. And then we get back to the confrontation from the end of episode 8 in the street in front of Wanda's Westview home. So it picks right back up after the title sequence to where we left off last episode.
"Well, that's just it, Wanda. He isn't yours. He's ours."
Billy and Tommy are still leashed up. Wanda wants Agatha to let them go. Agatha is provoking Wanda. It works because Wanda knocks her off her feet, freeing the boys, and Wanda tells them to go to their room. Agatha says, "You know, maybe you should do that." They want to stay. We get the classic creepy shot, though, of a magical person rising from the ground just at their feet, right? She's raising with her arms stretched out wide, showing that it's magic. It's not possible that it's anything else that's causing Agatha to rise to her feet. It's unnatural. Tommy speeds them off. Something else they could have put in previously on, you know, would have been the power drain that Agatha performed on the witches of her coven, because she wants Wanda to attack her here to absorb her power.
"They take power from the undeserving. It's kind of my thing."
It's like the shark in that episode, the commercial episode, where it's like, "I'm snacking on your magic." The shark is Agatha. Wanda looks down at her hand. It's withering a little bit. She gets blasted by Agatha's purple magic and she's knocked down, but she gets up the old-fashioned way now on her hands and knees, so no magic here getting her up. She's getting up on her own. Agatha wants Wanda to surrender her magic to someone who knows what to do with it, and in return, she says she'll let Wanda keep this pathetic little corner of the world all to herself. This time, she's really, you know, she's hammering her with, you know, guilt. A little bit later, she's going to be more subtle, but right now she's, you know, just give it to me. I know what to do with it. And you can keep this stupid little world to yourself. It seemed to be the case that Agatha was mad that someone would have all this power without study. And if you remember, Agatha's origins were revealed last episode. She was stealing power. She didn't understand. She was pleading to the coven to help her understand it. But as we will see, she wasn't going to be just satisfied with just the knowledge. It's in service of her having the power. So it was a lie back then. And this is really her true meaning. Like, she doesn't really think that it's the studying part. She feels like that can happen at any time. She wants the power. She offers a deal, but as TV watchers know, when an evil being offers a deal in exchange for power, it's like the monkey's paw. The minute they get that power, they will renege on the deal, or it'll have an extra codicil that you just don't understand or don't know about. You know, the box where, don't worry, the box is going to go to someone you don't know, kind of a thing. There's always something else. At this point, at least, though, Wanda's not ready to negotiate. She distracts her and us with her magic forming in her hand. There's a red ball of magic forming in her hand, but Agatha doesn't see the red Buick that Wanda drove into town. It's flying in from behind, crashing them both into the house. Now, she did something like that to Tony Stark in Germany during the airport battle in Captain America Civil War. She hit him with cars from behind. So that's not going to be her first time reusing a trick either that she used on Tony. It makes a lot of sense here because, remember, she vilified the Starks because of her parents getting killed, even though we can't be sure that's what caused the explosion that killed her parents, because there was an explosion before the bomb hit. Since that shell did not explode, it was the one that she was fixated on for so long. But Wanda goes up to inspect the damage, check the body, and we get an awesome shot of Agatha's boots. Not only did she knock off the boots, right, or knock her right out of her shoes, it's a clear homage to the Wicked Witch in The Wizard of Oz, where instead of a car knocking into her, it was the house. This time a car knocks her into the house, and it was the Wicked Witch of the East in that movie. Here in Westview, on the East Coast, Agatha's mother was Evanora, the name of the witch from the East, from the movie Oz the Great and Powerful, which is a few of the people that were making WandaVision happened to work on that movie. So a lot of tie-ins there. Now, she doesn't find Agatha's dead body, but instead Vision's dead body floats down to the street, and she sees him in the reflection of one of the pieces of mirror that's still up and not crashed into. It's Pale Vision, Hayward's weapon formed from the corpse and brought to life with Wanda's magic. Wanda is shocked to see Vision this way, but she seems to know it's not the one that she created inside the hex. She's still in shock when Pale Vision puts his hands on her face. She caresses his left hand. She's like, Vision? But then when he puts his right hand on the other side of her face and starts crushing it, well, in my opinion, it should have been all over right there, right? He gives some line about, like, I thought you were powerful or whatever.
And I was told you were powerful.
She should be dead unless she's got some sort of fail-safe magic to prevent her from being crushed. The Vision could have just squashed her like a grape, right? Maybe it started slow, and then she protected herself with some kind of reflexive magic, but Pale Vision clearly winning until the real Vision, the Wanda Vision, the one that she created in the Hex, shows up, flies straight into him, knocking him literally through the pavement of the street, and throwing him into an RV that explodes. Wanda then makes a hero landing from Pale Vision's grasp, and the Red Vision does a hero turn from the explosion floating in midair. His first concern midair is, where are the boys? Great dad, right? Wanda tells him they're safe in the house and picks this moment to come clean, telling him she should have told him everything the moment she knew. He says, it's all right. He knows why she made the world. She says she can fix it. And his reply is, can you? Agatha reappears, though, goads Wanda a little bit. We get the lines from Wanda and the Vision that we saw in the trailers. This is our home. Let's fight for it. Vision goes off after Pale Vision. Agatha leads Wanda toward the center of town. Meanwhile, the camera pulls back to a captive in Agatha's house. Monica Rambeau is in the attic of the house Agatha called home, But she's not alone. Pietro is there. If you're wondering how he could keep her prisoner with her new powers or whatever they end up being, you know, we get to see how he can keep her prisoner. She sees the attic door, but Pietro cuts her off and does a little finger push. Now, since he's got super speed, his slight push with his finger knocks her back violently, but thankfully she's got a soft landing on the couch. We go from there to the two visions squaring off in the sky above Westview. Great action sequence. It's made clear the pale vision is not interested in peace. It's there to destroy Wanda. It's a heck of a power move for director Hayward. If he succeeds, he's got control over a weapon, but what does he really think he's going to do with it? And does he really think that no one could wrestle control of it from him? He's got this plan where he's going to control Vision, but what happens with the AI? I mean, the scene ends with the two plummeting to Earth, leaving a crater where Wanda's Vision appears to get the upper hand and that he gets a cool hero landing, but Pale Vision is still in the fight. He grabs hold of his cape and the two fly off again. But really, what is Hayward thinking here? Hayward and his henchman, Agent Rodriguez, are tracking both visions inside the Hex. Hayward wants to resend instructions to confirm it's going to target Wanda, but Pale Vision is apparently overloaded at the moment. Still, Rodriguez says it appears that they still have control at this point. Sword agents bring in Jimmy Woo, who we last saw with Major Goodner. I didn't see Major Goodner reappear. So he's been captured, but what about the others? Woo and Hayward have a classic TV tropey, "You'll never get away with this," back and forth. Woo lays out all the ways that Hayward has left evidence. Hayward says no one will care if they kill Wanda and control Vision, and seemingly offers to bring in Jimmy on the comm, but he says he lacks the Vision. Woo scoffs at the plan, saying he's got agents from the FBI coming within the hour. Hayward thinks he's bluffing.
"You're bluffing."
"Am I?"
"We're done here."
Woo, meanwhile, has stolen a phone off a desk and apparently also a safety pin, because as soon as his guards leave him, he uses a cell phone to call Cliff. I have to think he's calling the Patterson, New Jersey field office, because it's easily the closest branch of the Newark Bureau. And either of those two places is closer than Quantico. He says, you know, he says he's going to, his friends in Quantico, whatever. Even by air, there's no way that anyone gets there as quick as the Patterson, New Jersey field office.
Flourish.
Wanda's looking for Agatha, lands in a busy town center right in front of the Westview Appliance Shop, which is the place that we keep seeing in all the advertisements on the back of the newspapers that Vision has been holding throughout the season. She sees people going about their days, sticking to the script Wanda has subconsciously written. Dennis, the delivery guy we saw delivering food and pizza in episode 8 before Wanda transformed Westview, he drives by in a Presto delivery van and gives a reread, kind of his first line in episode 2. The, "Don't shoot, I'm only the messenger." Wanda gets blasted in the back by Agatha and knocked to the ground. Agatha's on top of that building that has the Westview appliance on the bottom floor, but she's on the top, standing in front of a sign for a cleaner that says, "All natural formula using the power of Mother Earth," which is a nice little nod to Wicca, because they're very, you know, in tune with Mother Earth. Agatha says Wanda hasn't even had to fight another witch, and then reveals for us that it was, in fact, the Darkhold that was the book in the basement. She said, "Did you know there's an entire chapter devoted to you in the Darkhold?" This show is serving really as an introduction to the character of Wanda Maximoff. Well, how did she get so powerful? She doesn't exactly know. She points out that no one taught her magic. It's all really the Mind Stone's fault, right? Not even innate magic, just an ability to think of what she wants to happen. And then she automatically casts the correct spell. Though the other edge of that sword is she doesn't always think of all the consequences and the trickle-down of her magic and people getting hurt, which they do. She needs a teacher, and she should study, but she's just never needed to because she's not interested in the power of it. We hear from Agatha why that might not be her choice as she reads from the Book of the Damned. Agatha tells us about the Scarlet Witch. She's forged, not born. So it means it's not an inherited title. So that line of stories where her mom was a previous Scarlet Witch is not going to apply here. Forged by fire? Forging is literally heating up, you know, maybe angering a metal, Wanda, and then beating it into a shape, making it suffer, right? And then drowning it. She said in the last episode that she feels like she's being hit by a wave, quenching it, you know, and it's, so it's quite the metaphor, forging the Scarlet Witch. Agatha goes on, there's no coven. Could this be why Agatha betrayed hers? Does she really want to be the Scarlet Witch? She says there's no need for incantation. Agatha may not be able to get around that one, but we already know that Wanda doesn't have to cast a spell. She just kind of does it. Her power exceeds that of the Sorcerer Supreme. That means Wanda is innately more powerful than the Ancient One and Doctor Strange. I shouldn't have said innately. She now, as the Scarlet Witch, would be more powerful than both of those two. It is her destiny also to destroy the world. And if that world includes Agatha, well then, that explains why she's got this interest in stopping
Wanda. I'm not what you say I am.
Oh, really?
Agatha ends up cutting the strings of Wanda's meat puppets, as she calls them, chanting something in Latin, and she frees Dottie first. Dottie pleads with Wanda, clearly scared. She says her name is Sarah, and from the credits, her name is Sarah Proctor, which happens to be the name of one of the witches in the Salem Witch Trials. But that's just a coincidence. She has an 8-year-old daughter. She says that maybe could be friends with her boys or even just a school bully. Whatever it is, she just wants to hold her. So the kids of the town are all confined to their rooms. It's very interesting. Wanda thinks it's a trick from Agatha, but the trick is that it's not a trick. Wanda really doesn't understand what she's doing in service of easing her grief. She doesn't understand what the cost is of her spells. As the townsfolk are freed and they see Wanda, they start to surround her and are not surprisingly upset they were being controlled. And so they're starting to surround her like the witches kind of did with Agatha in Salem. Back in Agatha's attic, Pietro's making a smoothie, offering Steven Seagal movies for Monica to watch with him. She glances at an end table and she finds a bill, then a headshot photograph of a young Ralph Boehner. B-O-H-N-E-R. Funny reference, perhaps, to Growing Pains, where a friend of Mike Seaver's, Richard Stabone, was called Boehner. And I think in an interview that Matt Shagman said that, yeah, that was, in fact, a reference to that. Because Matt Shagman was a child actor who had been in tons of 80s shows. Monica realizes this is Ralph's house. So this is Ralph. Agatha has been using him as a puppet. It's not her husband. It's a puppet. This means the X-Men tie into the multiverse is not going to happen this way with Evan Peters as Quicksilver from the X-Men universe. Sorry, but we find out here that it's not going to happen. It was just a really cool recasting nod. Monica wonders how he's being controlled. So she wrestles him to the ground, which I don't know how that works after, you know, we saw her trying to escape. Maybe he thinks something else is going to happen, but she sees some kind of necklace, a puka necklace glowing with purple power on his neck when she gets, you know, she straddles him. So she rips it off, and then he immediately comes out of the spell begging her to spare his life.
Oh God, please, spare my life.
Nice to meet you, Ralph.
Then we go back to the Visions who are fighting. It seems Billy and Tommy have been watching them from their window as Dad was fighting. But the two go out of view. Billy gets a vision in his head of Wanda in trouble, and so they head toward her. Wanda, meanwhile, is being surrounded by all the townspeople. Familiar faces are confronting her. Herb, Bev, the delivery man, Norm, Dottie, Mrs. Hart. They're pleading with Wanda to let them go. Wanda is trying to convince herself, though, through convincing them, that they're fine. She says they're being kept safe and at peace. But Norm says they have her nightmares when she lets them sleep. Dottie's character says they feel her pain. Mrs. Hart says her grief is poisoning them. The voices get to be too much, and Wanda lets out a scream, accompanied by a burst of red energy. She wanted them to stop, so her magic made them stop by starting to choke. So it's a less elegant form of control from the necklace that Agatha put on Ralph. This is a necklace that's choking them. It's a leash or a noose around their necks, and they're having trouble breathing. She realizes, though, what she's done, and she says, no, stop it. So kind of echoing back to Mrs. Hart, stop it. Mrs. Hart says, if you won't let us go, at least let us die. Wanda at first just says, I will, and it's creepy if you think she's going to just stop there and let them die. She clarifies she's going to let them go. Agatha interjects, though, goading her to do it now. A hero wouldn't torture people, and it works. Wanda starts removing the barrier at the scene. She tells the people to go. They start running, panicked, through the streets. Outside the Hex, Hayward sees this as an opportunity. Maybe he thinks that the Vision is killing or has killed Wanda. So he orders his team in. He's like, let's go. Visions, they're still battling, though. But because the Hex is being taken down, the Wanda-created version starts coming apart, just like he did when he tried leaving the Hex the first time in Episode 6. He falls to Earth as Hayward's trucks roll through the open part of the Hex. Tommy and Billy make it to the center of town. Vision stands up from his fall to the Earth. So now flanking Wanda is her family, and they're literally falling apart. Agatha points out the obvious. Save Westview, or save her family. She says she tied her family to this twisted world, implying that she could have had it all without the Hex. Maybe if she had just had some study. Wanda can't bear it any more now than she could before. So she pulls the Hex back together. Outside town, Jimmy Woo's FBI reinforcements arrive just as the Hex is closing back up. Inside, Tommy and Billy and Wanda's version of Vision reform and recover now that the Hex is back protecting the town. Wanda protects them from a blast from Agatha that bounces off a force field and destroys the gazebo. Agatha, though, siphons off some of the magic that she used, drains Wanda just a little bit more, leaving both her hands grayed out now. So it's interesting, in one sense, she's going back to black and white. You know, her hands are turning black and white. Pale Vision and Hayward's sword team join Agatha as threats in the center of town. There's perhaps a nod to The Incredibles, because Vision, Wanda, and the boys are all striking a defensive pose as a family. And Vision says that Wanda and he never really prepared the boys for this, and Wanda counters, saying they were born for it.
Your mother and I never really prepared you for this.
But you were born for it.
Pale Vision attacks. The two visions begin fighting into the town library. Wanda's vision takes a new tact and starts with a simple question. Why are you doing this? The Pale Vision answers his directive is to destroy the vision. Wanda's vision gains a momentary upper hand in the fight and mentions he's not the true vision, only a conditional vision, by almost whispering it to him from behind while he's got him in a headlock. It's a little evocative of the way that Wanda does mind control on people. She sneaks up from behind. It's almost like he's planting a virus through logic, a logic virus. It works, because the Pale Vision pauses and asks for elaboration. Back in the town center, the sword agents make the mistake of pointing guns at Agatha, and she levitates the guards high above the ground. She says, same story, different century. It's always going to be torches and pitchforks for ladies like us. She releases them, but Wanda prevents them from falling all the way from that height with her magic. Wanda then tells her boys to handle the military. Mommy will be right back. Tommy does a quick run, stealing all the guns and stuff off the sword agents with super speed after Billy froze them. Hayward's having none of that, so he gets out of his vehicle, pulls a gun on the kids, and I don't understand how this is happening. No one seems to have a problem with him doing this to the kids, unless everybody is just still frozen solid, you know, frozen there. But someone does have a problem with it. Monica gets to the town center, steps in front of the bullets. They pass through her slowly and stop and fall when they exit her. It's like she turns her body into some kind of energy field. Her eyes glow orange. She's using a superpower, of course, although I don't know if she really knows what she's doing. One bullet, though, passes by her. Billy magically stops it, kind of like Neo in the Matrix with his magic. Monica and Billy compliment each other on their tricks. Hayward decides to jump into a vehicle and leave. Maybe he's going for plausible deniability, Or maybe now that he sees Monica has powers, he's like, I'm not dealing with this. So he throws his Humvee in reverse before he can take off forward. The funnel cake truck T-bones him. And it's Darcy driving the truck. She smiles and says, have fun in prison. I don't think she was wearing a seatbelt, though, and I didn't see an airbag deploy, so maybe the properties of the other Humvee that transformed into the funnel cake are taking precedent over the physics of the funnel cake truck. But whatever it is, she seems to be fine. And this is, I think, her only appearance in the entire show. So it might have been a scheduling issue for her.
Have fun in prison!
In the library, Wanda's Vision gets a subroutine working inside the Pale Vision by bringing up the Ship of Theseus thought experiment in the field of identity metaphysics. The Pale Vision recounts the thought experiment, which deals with whether something retains its identity over time. In the example given, it's the ship Theseus, the supposed hero and founder of Athens, used to sail from Crete back home after defeating the Minotaur. Whether or not he was real, there was a real ship that Athenians kept in port to honor him, and they even used it to sail in rituals. Over time, though, the ship's wood rotted and had to be replaced board by board. And so the question, brought up by real historical figures like Plato, Heraclitus, Plutarch, and others, is the ship the same when any of it has been replaced, or some of it replaced, or all of it replaced? Through discussion, both visions come to an agreement. Neither is the true vision, and both are the vision at the same time. One of them has been created from the original material without the Mind Stone. The other, Wanda's vision, has not one bit of original material. Wanda's version then posits that the memories he has are the rot, and the wear and tear on the Pale Vision is the voyages that the ship took. Pale Vision objects, saying he doesn't retain memories, but Wanda's vision says he's got the data and it's being kept from him. This is something that the visions, the Wanda's vision, probably figured would appeal to himself, possibly because, you know, he knows how analytical he is. So the wheels are turning. Pale Vision realizes he's being enslaved by programming and says, a weapon to be more easily controlled. Now, this is that danger of AI that Tony Stark could have warned old Hayward about. But remember, I mean, that's what we are all learning. Why would Hayward count on being able to control, you know, the most sophisticated AI weapon that was ever created? Pale Vision has one final test, though, for Wanda's vision. Surely you're the real vision because you believe you are. Wanda's vision passes honestly because he tells him he may have once felt like that, but after meeting Pale Vision, he knows that's not the case. Then he insinuates that he can free him by saying, as a carbon-based synthesoid, his memory storage isn't so easily wiped. He doesn't force it. He kind of requests permission to do it, and it's granted. Pale Vision lowers his forehead, and Wanda's vision touches where the Mind Stone would have been, his third eye, much like Doctor Strange was touched by the Ancient One and sent him through that real trippy trip through the multiverse. Something interesting is, though, that the first shot seen after the spot turns from blue to yellowish is like this flashback of image. The data pathways and images that are shown in his storage, his memory storage, are elongated hexagons. So maybe that's where all the hexagons are coming from. The Pale Vision is awakened. He sees the bodies passed in flashes, and on his face, the yellow fades back to blue, but his eyes change. So this kind of signifies that the cataract is gone. Remember Project Cataract? That cataract is gone, and now he can see clearly. Now that the memories are restored, the Pale Vision lacks nothing but the experience of the emotions, and the Mind Stone, of course, because he has the memories now and access to his old data. He says,
I am Vision.
And he takes off skyward. His voice distorted before as the Pale Vision no longer distorted. He speaks that line, I am Vision, clearly. So it's the first time we hear his voice clear. There was a distortion on it, and now it's clear.
And I was told you were powerful. I am Vision.
We don't see the Pale Vision again. This is something we need answered, but it's got to be coming. It's entirely too large a thread to say unraveled. Now, at this point in time, this is my favorite Marvel scene, movies and TV, because It appeals to intellect and philosophical questions rather than victory through might or even virtue. It's an example of the struggle to understand what it means to be human, because right now, I don't have any of the same cells that I had when I was born, but I'm still the same me, and I have new memories and have forgotten some old ones. I'm not the same person I was yesterday. I'll be a different person tomorrow by those standards, yet I am who I am. It's awesome to think that some people are going to be thinking about these things the first time by watching a comic book show. It's really cool that people are going to get exposed to this, even if they don't realize it. In the scene, though, Wanda's vision heads out of the library, finds his boys and Monica in the center of town. Apparently, Sword agents are still controlled by Billy because they're not moving, but again, the pale Vision is gone. He went through the skylight, and he's out of there.
But certainly you are the true Vision, for you believe yourself to be. I am Vision.
Agatha is on the top of a building, overlooking the center of town, plotting her next move. Maybe she wonders, where did Wanda go? Well, she's using another old trick of hers. She moves up from behind like she did to Tony Stark and puts a spell on Agatha right at her temples. She makes her think she's back in Salem on the stake and that the dead witches she drained are on the ground around her. Wanda comes from behind her in the vision or daydream or nightmare or daymare, whatever it is that Wanda did to her. She says the difference between them is that Agatha did what she did on purpose. Agatha seems to be begging her to stop as the bodies of the witches begin to move. It seems like a moment of victory here, but if you remember from episode 8, Agatha was insincerely begging then as well. She does turn the tables on Wanda. The witches come to life, call out Wanda's name, point their bony fingers at her, and they say she's a witch. Evanora, the mother of Agatha, calls her the Scarlet Witch, and the others start chanting, "So it is written." They surround her like the townsfolk just did earlier, when they were unleashed by Agatha. Evanora calls her by another name, the Harbinger of Chaos. The witches continue to chant, "So it is written," and now add, "So it is foretold." Agatha walks away from the stake, and the witches put Wanda at the stake with magical bonds instead. Agatha gives herself away with the next line, if you pay attention. She says, "You can't win, Wanda. Power isn't your problem, it's knowledge." Agatha is counting on her not knowing things. A scarlet crown, though, magically appears on Wanda, and the dead witches move back a little bit. Agatha makes an offer she already knows is bogus, but she makes it again. And this time, remember, earlier in the episode, she was kind of insulting Wanda. Now she's counting on Wanda not to have the knowledge. She says, "Give me your power, and I will correct the flaws in your original spell." She knows that's bogus.
"Give me your power, and I will correct the flaws in your original spell."
She says, "You and your family and the people of Westview can all live together in peace, and no one will ever have to feel this pain again, not even you." Wanda bursts with energy, knocks back the chanting witches. They fall back down dead again, and then she charges at Agatha. We get a battle over Westview, a red storm brewing. Wanda says for Agatha to take her power. She alternates between hit her with blasts of energy, and then Agatha's absorbing some of the shots to Wanda, and then Wanda's missing, hitting the barriers of the hex. Vision flies up to help, but Wanda creates a barrier to keep him back. Agatha seems a little confused by how inaccurate Wanda is, but it's just like a magician and sleight of hand. We even see a shot of the magician named James E. Wu outside of the hex with the FBI gathering evidence from the base camp as he watches the outside of the barrier getting pelted by blasts from the inside. Later, we'll see how all of this ties together. Inside, Agatha's goading Wanda, "Escape your fate. Release your burden." And she's absorbing any of the power from the shots that hit her. She says, "There's more. I want it all." Wanda appears to be growing tired, but she unleashes another flurry of blasts, like her last salvo. Agatha laughs maniacally, and on the ground, the boys call out to Wanda. She's floating, almost lifeless. Agatha's plan seems to be working, right down to the part where she reveals she was lying about helping. Like, once you cast a spell, it can never be changed. She says the world Wanda made will always be broken, just like her, and it's brutal to hear something like that. Except, when she goes to drain the last little bit of power from Wanda, nothing happens. So Wanda's been a little bit naughty. She pretended she was getting weaker. She glamored herself unglamorous and losing power. She wasn't missing. She was casting runes around the inside of the hex. Something we mentioned about the hex in our last episode. We said, why wasn't the hex protection from other forms of magic? I guess that didn't work for her. Well, as Wanda reminds Agatha, only a witch who casts the runes can perform magic in a given space, and she thanks her for the lesson. That Scarlet Crown begins to reappear. She says she doesn't need Agatha to tell her who she is. She begins to drain the power back from Agatha, and it seems as if Agatha is genuinely agonizing over this. It's probably the loss of power, though, because death doesn't seem like something she fears. It's the power. As Wanda takes in power and more of it, she starts to transform, or at least her clothing does. She takes on an appearance that resembles the one she saw in the Mind Stone version back in the Hydra lab in Sokovia. When she finishes, Agatha says she doesn't know what she's done. There does seem to be some concern there that she's actually going to destroy the world, but she's the Scarlet Witch. The two of them float down to the center of town. Wanda solely focused on Agatha, not even Vision or the boys who are there in the background. Agatha pulls out her mercy card. She, instead of waiting to find out what happens, she offers up in the form of a question. She's like, so what are you going to do now? Are you going to lock me up somewhere? You know, clever, like suggest locking her up and not killing her. But maybe she knew that Wanda wasn't going to do that. Wanda tells her, not somewhere here. And this seems to bother Agatha. Not exactly a fate worse than death level, but maybe close in her mind. Wanda is going to shackle her to the town in a persona. The one that Agatha chose for herself, unwittingly, I guess, the nosy neighbor. Agatha is going to be Agnes. She tries to plead that Wanda will need her because she doesn't know what she unleashed. Wanda points out she'll know exactly where to find her. And with a tap to the forehead, Agatha transforms back into a version of Agnes, blending in with the other ladies of the town. Though where she's going to live is a kind of a troubling question, because if it's Ralph's basement, it's going to definitely dispel the illusion. Either Ralph is going to know she's down there, or I don't know how she... Maybe it's a spell that Wanda is going to allow so that she can live in the basement, but where does she go during the day? Catherine Hahn plays it beautifully, because I really could sense her being locked behind the eyes and the false smile there. It almost seemed like she really was screaming to get out, but she's only able to scream out like, hiya, hun, and okie dokie, artichokey. And Wanda saves the curse for last. You live here now, and maybe this is the answer. No one will ever bother you. And she says she'll be seeing her, which is great, because I do want to see more of Catherine Hahn. Great job.
Okie dokie, artichokey.
Billy and Tommy run to Wanda and ask, is she all right? Vision strolls up, says their dream home is now a fixer-upper, and he knows she'll set things right, just not for them. He knows what has to happen, and she knows too, and we, the audience, now realize what all this means, even if we kind of suspected it would end this way. So they start to head to their house, and as they do, the hex is starting to shrink from the outside. They hit their street. We see a little of the damage has stayed on the road. The sun's setting, but it's probably just Wanda doing that because it was firmly daytime just a little while ago, but now it's starting to get the sunset. And there's a purpose to that twilight, because it's the twilight of this magical place that she's created. As they hit the threshold of their house, they change from their superhero costumes into mom and dad attire. The kids are going off to bed, but there's more to it than that. And if you're a parent, you really start to get quite sad at the thought of what's going to go on here. Vision and Wanda are putting their kids to sleep. Now, it's not like they're going to die in their sleep, but they're going to cease to exist. And part of them might even suspect it. Unless they've been charmed, certainly Billy might suspect it if he tried to think about it. The scene is really heartbreaking here, and it's also kind of uplifting at the same time, because Wanda and Vision are telling them that they love them, they're proud of them. Family's forever, and they can never truly love each other, even if they tried. Leave each other if they tried. They kiss goodnight, and as they stand at the door, Vision and Wanda see that time is running out. Wanda leaves them with one more loving line.
Thanks for choosing me to be your mom.
The town continues to change back, and we see that indeed, It's going from day or night to day when the hex passes by. In the living room, Wanda's taking a look at family photos, and she begins to turn out the lights. Vision turns one back on, though, and he says he's heard it's bad luck to say goodbye in the dark. She says, no, you didn't hear that. But he says, maybe he just wanted to see her clearly, which, now that he has all the information, he is seeing her clearly. He loves her. Time's running out. The hex changing back homes on their street. Vision says he knows they can't stay like this, but he wants to know, what am I? And she lets us in on the secret. She says he's the piece of the Mind Stone that lives inside her. He's a body of wires and blood and bone that she created, her sadness and hope, but mostly her love. Vision sheds a tear. He's doing something that in his real body he never had to deal with, just as he never fully dealt with it. He never fully dealt with loss because he never had to. He never had something to lose. Wanda never dealt with her loss. And now he's dealing with it in his body, and he's shedding a tear. His response, his voice, he was a voice with no body, as Jarvis, a body but not human, like the first Vision, and now he's a memory made real. He starts to get a little worried by the approaching hex. So he says, we had to say goodbye before, and now they're back together, so it stands to reason. She finishes the thought saying, we'll say hello again. The hex races around the corner of their home, and as it hits their house, the center of the hex, the transformation takes them back through the errors in the home, and Vision starts disappearing into yellow magic, but not before he says, so long, my darling. A shot is of Wanda from behind with her hands up where his face once was. She's not full of tears and in despair of grief. She's finally come to terms with her loss, perhaps finally getting time to say goodbye properly. So when we see her face, when we see her head on, she's kind of got a smile on her face. She looks at the foundation, though, the outline of the foundation around her, and her smile disappears. So she puts up her hood and starts walking toward the center of town.
We have said goodbye before, so it stands to reason.
We'll say hello again.
Wanda starts to see everyone in town noticing her. The hood's not fooling anyone. They don't really know what to do. They're not shouting at her, but they do appear angry. We don't get to see what happened to Ralph or where new Agnes is, but we see Monica Rambeau is waiting for Wanda. Having seen the town transform back, she knows what Wanda gave up and says the town won't know what she sacrificed for them. Wanda says it wouldn't change how they see her and is surprised that Monica doesn't hate her. Monica does what probably most of us would do and admit if we had the power and the chance, we'd have probably brought back a loved one. Wanda apologizes for all the pain and says she doesn't understand her power, but she will. And hearing sirens approach, she says goodbye, transforms her clothes back to her Scarlet Witch costume, and flies to the edge of town. As the sun starts to set for real, she pauses at the sign to look back, and then she flies away. No broom needed for this witch.
Bye, Wanda. Good luck.
We do get a mid-credit scene. Jimmy Woo's directing the FBI investigation in town center. He says the pharmacy's good for medical, hardware store for evidence collection. Monica walks up and they have a nice conversation. Darcy's mentioned skipping out before getting debriefed, but they say they can thank her for trapping Hayward in the truck, and we see him getting let off in cuffs. Then a woman with a badge walks up and says, Monica, you're being asked for in the theater. So Monica goes there all the way to the screen at the front of the Coronet Theater. The woman knows Monica is wondering what's going on, so she starts to drop her disguise. She says she was sent by an old friend of her mother's. The agent is really a Skrull. You know, the shapeshifters from Captain Marvel. She says the friend, a he, heard Monica had been grounded but would like to meet with her. And where? She points up in space. It's made clear. So I think we're supposed to know it's either Talos or Nick Fury that's sending for her. Probably Nick Fury. But we're not done. There's another credit scene after this is one comes at the end of the credits before the multiple language credits, like where Disney Plus shows you who did all the voices for all the different languages. This one is a sweeping mountain shot coming to view, gliding over a mountain lake toward a small remote cabin. It's not the Hulk. It's Wanda on the porch with a mug of tea. We follow her inside to the teapot, but then The camera continues right by her into the bedroom, and there the Scarlet Witch is sitting legs crossed with magical orbs surrounding her, astrally projected form. She's reading the Darkhold. Suddenly she hears Billy and Tommy cry out for help. Her astral form has glowing red eyes and is hearing these voices projected astrally. So is it the boys or is someone trying to lure her where they might think they can get her to come to trick her for some reason? Whatever it is, there's a flash of red light and then the series is over. It's been a lot of fun. It's been fun having something each week to theorize and speculate. And it made the weeks seem shorter. But there's nothing more for this show. And there's really not much we can speculate. I mean, we could speculate on anything coming in the new shows that are coming up. Loki and the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Black Widow. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Thor, Love and Thunder. All those things. There could be nods and mentions of it. And I hope it's sooner than later. But it's really, really hard to speculate where we're going to lead from here. This, after all, was supposed to be like the fourth show in the line of shows that were coming out on Disney Plus from Marvel, but then because of the pandemic, it moved it up to the first one, and it was quirky and weird, and it was kind of like a mystery, and it was interesting. Matt Shakman, the director, mentioned it might be disappointing to some fans, and, you know, frankly, I can understand that. It was very good. I very much enjoyed it, but it leaves a lot of questions, and I'm fine with there being questions and having them answered later, but not years later or 10 movies later or even next year. I want some of the answers to come a little bit sooner. We have to find out this year, where did Pale Vision go? We don't have to see his character or know every detail, but we kind of need to know what his destination and what his path is going to be. They can't also kill him off screen, right? They can't just have that be the last time we see the Vision. We also need to see Agnes return, and in a meaningful way. You don't just say, I'll be seeing you, and you don't just trap her unless we get to see and hear the torture of her boring life. Probably we will see it, maybe in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, but that's like a year away. Not 2021, 2022. Now, maybe there's something fun there. She could always be trying to escape, only to find out that Doctor Strange or Wanda has always got her next move foiled. That might be interesting to watch. What about Monica Rambeau? We need to see her develop her superpowers. We don't even know exactly what she can do. We kind of have an inkling of it, but we don't know for sure. If she suddenly shows up in Captain Marvel 2 with fully realized power, fans are going to feel cheated, and it's really going to be a shame. People who haven't seen the show will not know who this is. And not seeing her until the next appearance of Nick Fury also feels way too long. How about Jimmy Woo and Darcy? They're non-superpowered individuals that fans still like, perhaps just because they're doing their jobs, but with a lot of virtue behind it. Now, Hayward can rot. We don't need to see him, but the beauty of a show-only creation is any of those are clearly expendable, right? They don't have a lot of history behind them. There's nothing that everything can be created whole cloth for them, so we could see Jimmy Woo in anything. And we could see Darcy in anything, or we could see them together in a new show. There's no comic book that we have to retcon, say. What about the townsfolk in Salem? Well, the townsfolk we may have to hear referenced, at the very least, by Agnes and Agatha, or Agatha Agnes, whatever we want to call her, in her new form. Somebody's going to have to say how the townsfolk are doing, or at least one or two of them, right? And what about Ralph? I mean, is she going to stick with Ralph? Is this Ralph's reward, you know, or is this his penance for being an unknowing puppet? I mean, where is she going to stay? What is Ralph's deal? Like, are we going to see a version of Quicksilver come back when the X-Men eventually do? Because we know they're coming, right? We know the X-Men are eventually going to come. The Salem Witches, though, they may come up again, although we may not see them. Maybe it happens with a flashback or something because of the Darkhold, because we're going to see more of the Darkhold. And we've got to see more of Agatha, right? But when she's talking to Wanda and telling her some secrets of magic, there's going to have to be mentions maybe of, well, when I was in the past, we did this or did that. And maybe they utilize a flashback to do that. Well, what do you think? Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter at thewayphase4 or again on Facebook, facebook.com/thewayphase4. Episode 9, directed again by Matt Shatman, written by Jack Schaefer, the showrunner. We are not done here, though, at This Is The Way Phase 4. That's why I want you to keep sending in emails. March 19th, the debut of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier series on Disney Plus, and you better believe we'll do some discussions about that. Maybe not as in-depth, because it doesn't seem like it's going to be a mystery. It seems more it's going to be like an action story to be told. Loki, that should be really fun. That's coming out in June 11th. We'll also do something with that. And if there's a movie, we will have a discussion about the movie. And, you know, there's more to come. We want to do more with Marvel. And we want to talk about it. And we hope you will join us. This has been This Is The Way Phase 4's discussion of Season 1, Episode 9, the finale of WandaVision. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.